Welcome to Got Your Milk, FX's The Strain Podcast. My name's Bubba, and with me, as always, is Mork. Mork, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Folks, if you're new to the podcast, this is a spinoff of The Joffrey Podcast, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones and George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series. This podcast, though, is about FX's The Strain, based on the great book written by Mork.
Chuck, the Prince of Thieves Hogan. And Guillermo, where are my car keys, Del Toro?
We have not read the books. This is a TV show friendly podcast. No spoilers. We're going to guess about stuff that's coming up, but we completely stay completely clean, like F in AA. We're going to keep it clean, Mork.
Yes. I'm not sure what kind of clean, but I am with you.
Listen, you're not going to need a UV light when you listen to this podcast. That it will be completely clean.
That is absolutely true. If you're locked out of your house, though, you know what would come in handy?
What would?
A UV light.
Oh, amen.
Your car
God,
won't start.
Yes.
You know what will help it? A UV light. That's what I learned this episode. What did you learn, Bubba?
I learned that it's very difficult to tell the difference between rat urine and vampire worm sludge.
That is true.
They both look the same under a UV light.
They both do. But was it worm or guano or bat? Bat guano? I don't remember.
Yeah, Colonel Bat Guano.
So should we... I think I'm excited to jump into this episode. There's a lot going on. Should we talk about how we felt about it?
Yeah, we're going to start every episode of our podcast by giving out cartons of milk. It's 10 cartons up all the way to 10 for a great episode. This is the second episode titled The Box that we're going to be discussing today. And for me, it was a bit better than last week. I gave the first episode only 6 cartons of milk. This, I think F would want a 7th carton of milk because he's going to go in there and get busy. I liked it more than last week's, just a little bit. I think the show is still growing, but I liked it more. What did you think, Mark?
Well, there was a lot of stuff I did like about this episode. However, I didn't like it as much as the pilot, so I'm going to give it only 6 one-pint cartons of strawberry blood-colored milk.
Oh, no. Let me tell you something. That's bad for bone density here.
Well, hey, look, let's spend a little less time on domestic drama and bureaucratic infighting and a little more time on horrible zombie vampires who are also Nazis, and some of them are also attorneys.
Let me say, you know, the one thing I really thought about this episode is that there was somebody who had a trouble with bone density. That was Bolivar.
That is true.
All right, so let's just jump right.
We will be here all week.
Let's just jump right into it, Mork. Last week, we started off by talking about scary scenes and scenes we didn't like. Do you want to do that this week, or do you just want to jump into the show?
Well, I think that's a great question. Let's talk about that.
All right, so it wasn't a scary scene, but my favorite scene in the episode was when Abraham and imitation Christoph Waltz came to his prison, and they had that kind of battle. You know, this ancient battle, it's continuing. It was kind of a comic booky scene. It was, you know, it could be campy, but it's just the right amount. That's what I want from this show. Those are the types of characters I want from the show. And so that was my, fresh carton of milk scene of the week. What was yours?
Well, that actually was a lot of fun. I am confused as to what exactly poor man's Christoph Waltz was doing with the plexiglass. I know he was touching it, and it was making a noise. I don't know why. And I'm also curious.
Yeah.
When we first met Abe, well, not when we first met Abe, but when we saw Abe at the airport.
Yeah.
And he pulled the old "I'm an old man and I'm trying to take my pills" routine.
Yep.
And sure did. And that got him out of trouble then. So how come he didn't use that gambit again?
You know what? That's a great point. Sometimes you don't want to just go to the well. You know, sometimes...
Sometimes you don't want to use the UV light, is what you're saying.
Right, yeah, you know, I really wonder... I mean, if you put that UV light on Abe, he's so old, there are going to be some stains there that just don't come off.
There, yes, absolutely. Poor Sarah.
So, sadly, we don't want to get off the show on a bad foot, but we do also want to talk about our spoiled milk scene of the week. This was a scene that didn't live up to expectations and could possibly have dragged the episode down. I'll go first and say my spoiled milk scene of the week was good old Everett, who is F's boss, who is just this bureaucratic know-nothing, which is a character which seems to have conflict for no reason whatsoever. If F and Nora are the CDC people who have been on the plane, they've done the examinations, and they say, hey, we've got an outbreak. Of course, the superiors would listen. They're paying these people to listen. But the fact that Everett and this mystery head of the human health and health and human services,
Kathleen Sebelius,
yes, whoever they are, you know what? That scene was terrible. I can't even talk about it anymore. That's my spoiled milk scene of the week. Did you have one, Mark?
You know, looking back on it, I think my spoiled scene of the week is the marketing for this show, because the marketing for this show tells us that we're gonna fall down the rabbit hole pretty
Amen.
Quick.
That's what it says.
And we're gonna spend some time falling, but pretty quickly things are gonna get pretty crazy.
Right.
And based off of that, I am bored off of my UV light holster. Let me tell you, because we've spent probably 40% of this episode with custody battles,
right, oh,
or
yeah,
bureaucratic infighting, as right, you pointed out, with Everett and the federal government, for God's
right,
sake.
Right, good. Get to
I don't, that doesn't matter. And you know, we've talked about this before. I mean, there's really a stakes issue. And I don't think that, you know, I'm rooting for F, and I hope he saves the day. And I can tell you, I'll bet you 2 UV lights, 1 carton of milk.
Okay, you seem pretty confident in this. What's your bet?
And 1 telltale heart.
Whoa.
That's right. I'm raising the stakes here, people. That when F saves the day, no one is going to say, well, thanks a lot for saving planet Earth or what's left of it, but you really should not have missed your kid's play. I don't think anyone's going to say that.
Zach's play was pretty good.
Well, Zach's an underrated actor.
he
really is.
He's under something acting.
He is. Well, I meant the
he's
character.
Under emoting. He's
he's playing it real. He's the Brando.
Oh, okay.
Of child actors. Anyway, let's jump into the.
Let's jump into the episode proper. But did you want to talk about what before we started recording? You said what you found to be the scariest thing in the episode, Mark. It was cracking me up. What did you find to be the scariest thing in this episode? To the box.
Well, by far the scariest part of this episode has been the response time of basically anyone in any official capacity in New York City. The last episode, the pilot episode, ended with the right, coroner of the city of New York, which we all know is not that big of a town. There's not that much going on.
Not a lazy Sunday.
No, really. What is happening? So he was eaten by, by zombies, vampire zombies. I don't know what these right, things are, but, you know, the people from the passengers. Let's call them the passengers. So he's eaten from the passengers, and he's not picking up the phone. But it's 24 hours later before anybody seems to care.
Right.
And that, to me, was very scary. That I could be, you know, maybe I listen to my mom and I go to medical school and I get a job as a medical examiner
right,
in New York City.
And look what could happen.
And this is what could happen.
Your corpse could never be found for many hours.
Exactly. For at least 8 hours. And also, let's
don't you think this is why Flava Flav saying 911 is a joke?
He could have. He absolutely could have. But apparently no one called 911.
Oh, but apparently, is that the problem?
Apparently okay, no one's even bothered to call 911. And our poor man's Robert Davi,
yeah,
hanging out in JFK. His head has been shattered.
Smushed.
I couldn't tell if that was chunks of brain or if the skull had frozen.
What if it was Jim's puke? You know, he threw up.
Jim was thrown up all over the place.
But not on his saddlebag.
That is a gorgeous bag. What kind? Is that horse leather or calfskin? It was beautiful.
So you're saying that the first responders are the worst responders, because they can leave a guy with a smashed in brain in the airport forever until the next episode till you're found.
Yeah, I mean, if you walk through an airport these days,
yes,
and you know, you could you can have, if they are keeping an eye on things, so what's the word I'm looking for?
Under lock, you know.
Yeah,
like it's
I mean, look,
a military zone.
You can't bring in a bottle of water through onto an airplane these days.
But you can't smash but Robert Downey's head.
And drive away. And, you know, also, you know, this is just another thing that's driving me bananas.
Sure.
Is we saw in the very, very first episode. Now, there have only been two. So we're not looking back that far. But we did see video evidence of something crazy going on with the box.
A box coffin just disappearing in under a second.
In under a second. So did we forget about that one as well? I don't know. So in addition to the response time, I'm also going to add the memory of our investigator, F. And he's got a lot on his plate.
He's got a lot on his plate. You know, you forget a box just vanished, you know, in front of you. Big, you know, listen, all I care about is Zach.
That's all that matters.
All that matters.
All that matters is good old Zach.
All right, so let's get into the box.
Thank you, Bob.
So we had all the exposition. We met so many characters last week, but this episode we begin by meeting yet another character.
Yeah.
We meet the Russian, what I can only call a rodent inspector.
Yeah. Well, he's got a super duper bachelor pad. Whatever Matt and Zach are building,
right? He's got this guy. Loft.
He's got a loft, and he's got a cat and
a fat
guns
cat.
And all sorts of what was it? Bed bug poison. It seemed very very scary. And he announces. He tells his cat he's going to go kill two. And
oh, good point. Yeah,
I didn't see him kill anybody.
Yet. The day is early.
Other Sunday than the scenery by chewing it up. But we met him. He seems intriguing. But that's all we know.
So we get introduced to him at the very beginning. Then we cut to Gus pulling the van down the ramp. And we see that this is pretty much taking place, maybe at the most an hour or so after the last episode ended. Gus pulls the van inside this little garage.
Spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen. We did not see where exactly he was driving into, but I have it on good authority.
Uh-oh, you know where the van pulled into.
I have it on good authority via some of my ham radio friends that Gus was pulling into the loading dock of Yankee Stadium.
Well, guess what? You can smash a brain there all you want.
Maybe you can.
He's the Bronx bomber, the Bronx smasher.
Look, Derek Jeter. Mm-hmm. We have. Let me put it to you this way, folks. I don't want to give anything away.
Is the box Derek Jeter's victory tour? Is that like the last? Is that a present for him since he's retiring?
Let's just say we haven't seen the thing in the box or Derek Jeter together in the same scene yet.
Okay, so Gus, he's all alone in this garage. He thinks that. Somebody's going to greet him. He gets a bit inquisitive.
Mm-hmm.
Curiosity killed the cat. But Gus gets away. He sees the van and the box shaking. He runs for the hills. And that gets us to the opening credits. And was that a scary scene, Mork, when Gus is approaching the van? Because I can get scared pretty easy, and I wasn't.
Well, yeah, I don't know, but how...
For some reason, I didn't think good old Gus would die. You know, it felt like you would have killed him in the last episode if you wanted to kill him.
Right. I think that's very fair, as always, Bubba. You are fair and wise.
Okay, so then after Gus runs away like a scaredy Gus, then we cut to Robert Davi's smashed-in head. Jim is puking up a storm once he sees that smush. Now, F, this drives me a bit batty.
Yeah.
F says... What could it, you know, he's the guy with, you know, the doctor, he's gone through all this stuff. He sees this and he's like, what could have crashed this guy's skull? It would have taken something very powerful. No idea. You know, he doesn't offer anything, any solutions. He's just like, I got no idea.
Well, I gotta challenge you on that one, Bubba. I think that as far as I know, most diseases cannot cause a head to explode. And so he's asking his opinion as a... you work for the CDC, you're a doctor, what could have caused this? Well, it's not anything that we're aware of. It's got to be something else. It's got to be something else. But it's...
What this requires? The UV light.
This
is the first... We should have a drinking game. Every time the UV light gets turned on, you drink. And this is the first one in the episode. They turn it on and see that kind of ammonia.
Next episode, the drinking game and the push-ups game, is going to be quite eventful, our faithful listeners, both of you. But this circles back to a quibble I have that I mentioned earlier where...
Let's hear it.
Well, we're in... you know, now
the cargo area of JFK is where theoretically this scene takes place.
We're in the cargo area of JFK, and we all know that terrible, terrible things have happened there. Let's just say
luggage has been lost.
Luggage has been lost. JFK Jr. learned to drive there. It was very, very, very
Jim
tragic.
Betrayed F there.
Yes, he did. So the and we remember from last week where we saw we had video evidence. We had a scientist staring at evidence of something he could not explain,
right.
Of a giant box,
yeah.
That they had found these creepy crawly worms in the dirt that
right.
was within the box.
Yeah,
we learned that later on, and we see the some sort of phantasm just swooping down and immediately carrying this giant box away, and then so that's one unexplainable thing. Then we
right.
go into the cargo hold, and
yep.
we see good old Sheridan, poor man's Robert Davi, and I think that's Sheridan, but I could be totally wrong about that.
He's dead. It doesn't matter what
it
his
doesn't
name
matter.
Was.
Poor man's Robert Davi. God bless him. So we see his head smash, and this is another. It's safe to say this is a rare occurrence, even at JFK. So
let's not assume. But
so
sure.
You know, would it be crazy to try to connect these two events, or?
Listen, F is a doctor. He's not a connector.
Touche.
He's going to need...
Touche.
Listen, he's got a guy for everything you need. You know, like if you need to be diagnosed, he's got the diagnosticator.
I believe it's a diagnostician.
The diagnostician.
The diagnostician.
He's got, listen, he's got something for everybody. Putting two and two together, he's not a mathematician.
He
he's a doctor.
Have, he does... God damn it, he doesn't have time for it.
So F puts this... The F goes up to the police... Can the CDC actually do this? F goes up to the police and he's like, hey, this crime scene is now under CDC control. And as it's part of CDC control, we're all going to leave because they're going to release the four living passengers from the
airplane. We got things to do here.
He's like, yeah. He's like, we're in charge. Goodbye.
But we're leaving. I don't know if there are either any CDC officials or NYPD officers listening. Please tweet us at Fit and Trim.
Yeah, please tweet us at Fit and Trim on Twitter. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
Let us know if this happens on a regular basis for you guys.
So F and Nora, even though they're once again the doctors theoretically on the scene checking things out, they get there and the four surviving passengers from the flight, from the Regis Airlines flight, are being let go. Let's go through those passengers real quick. I think her name is Joan, the uptight lawyer. We
yes.
have the concerned bald pilot.
Yep.
We have rock star Bolivar,
yep.
or to his friends, Gabe.
Gabe.
And we have guy with round glasses who we haven't really met yet, who I'm sure we'll meet in a bit.
Yes. We have those four people, and of those four people, other than the bald guy, I'm pretty sure...
The bald pilot.
Other than the bald pilot, exactly. I think we have our in addition to F's, we have our three other wigs.
Three, right, four surviving passengers, four wigs.
Bolivar and that other guy are definitely wearing wigs. Don't ask me how I know. I know.
So F, once again, F is a little power hungry. He's like, you're not going to leave. I'm in charge. And he signals the cops over.
Yeah.
But Joan, the upset lawyer, says, I'm going to call the head of the Department of Health and Human Services, whoever has replaced Kathleen Sebelius here
yes.
in the U.S. And she's like, I'm getting out. Now, these people, they're being told by a doctor that, okay, you feel fine now, but you may have a contagion. And yet they don't seem to care. They're like, I want to go home.
They, first off, if you're in quarantine at JFK, that means you have to eat airplane food.
Oh, God. Get me out of here.
So, yes.
Release me.
Let's get the hell out of town.
Year one of the plague, but I didn't wait in the crappy airline food.
So, no, yeah. F is, he's dealing with some stuff here, absolutely.
Yep.
But he may have met his match, not with Nazi vampires, but... with attorneys
right.
who may actually also turn into vampires. So,
oh, maybe. A vampire attorney. That's pretty good.
If you thought attorneys
were bad.
They won't
need to sleep. Oh, but if your court case gets called at like noon,
you're screwed.
They'll be like, where's your lawyer? And you'll be like, look, what do you want me to do?
You're screwed.
You need to go to night court.
What if you're on the trial of your life
yes.
and there is proof, there is exculpatory evidence that you
right.
did not commit this terrible crime,
yeah.
but it's garlic. And your vampire attorney, will not admit it into evidence. Oh. This could happen, people. Do not hire vampire attorneys.
Okay. Anyway. So anyway, we cut from that, and we have a brief scene of Mr. Johnson in imitation Christoph Waltz, and they're watching what I assume is Stoneheart headquarters. They're watching the news about the plague, and they're very excited. Then we cut to the jail, where we see who else is watching the news. New York City.
Yep.
The jails have cable, people. It's our friend Abraham.
Greatest city in the world.
He's watching it. So a cop comes in and says, Abraham, your lawyer's here. Abraham's like, I don't have an attorney. And he comes out, and who is it? It's Mr. Eyeslitz.
Poor man's Christoph Waltz.
And they have kind of like a wizard meeting here between the pane of glass at the jail. And they have a big history, and I'll go ahead and talk a bit about this scene. It was my favorite scene in the episode, even though it is just two guys sitting and talking. But it and more exposition, which can be tough. But it really, like I said, it was kind of campy. It was kind of fun. It has all the thrills you would want. You see the history. I'm going to try to recap the history real quickly. This goes back to Nazi Germany. So, imitation Christoph Waltz. It's not just that he's a vampire. It's not just that his eye slits are nutty. It's that he's a frigging Nazi. And he refers to Abraham by his number. And I don't know about you, Mark. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But Nazis are bad. Maybe that's too strong. Hold on. Don't yell at me at Twitter for judging people.
Yes.
But anyway, I'm saying this is pretty bad. But so anyway, Abraham with his infamous sword apparently cut up an associate of imitation Christoph Waltz way back when, theoretically back around World War II, when he dumped them in the North Sea. Yeah. Take that, North Sea.
Yeah.
But then Abraham, we saw him in his back of his pawn shop, he had that telltale heart beating.
Yep.
And that apparently is the heart of someone Abraham really cared about.
Who do you think Sarah is?
That is a great question. So I was trying to do the math, and if this show was at all realistic, which, let's be honest, it's a documentary, but if it was at all realistic, Abraham, even though he could have been alive in those 40s and in a concentration camp, in something terrible there, the person he loved would have been his mother. You know, he would have been so young that I can't imagine that he had a girlfriend or anything.
Oh, I think it is his girl. I think it's
you
his
do?
Girl. Yeah. And he, because, you know, this is 60, yeah, it's almost 70 years ago. So he could have been.
It's more than, is the show set in 2014?
Well, we don't actually know. If anybody knows what the date is of the show
we
or
need
the
to know
year.
Because the eclipse
we know the eclipse
coming,
is coming on
and,
the 12th.
And Bolivar is having a concert the night of the eclipse. So,
know,
so we need to know that.
We need tickets. If anybody has tickets, please send us them at fitandtrim on Twitter.
Do you think, and it's not .com on Twitter.
I have
Mark,
no idea.
You got to get a Twitter handle. You think at all that Abraham's love, the beating heart, do you think there's any chance that that heart is actually Hitler's?
I don't think it's Hitler's, but watching this,
yes,
and watching poor man's Christoph Waltz and the way that they've introduced him, he's very well put together.
Yeah.
And there's something definitely sinister about him.
It's very sinister.
We see him doing things that we do not like, do not agree with at all. Just like we saw all of those things with Jaime Lannister. Could poor man's Christoph Waltz actually be the hero?
Redemptive arc, you know?
Nothing like redeeming a Nazi vampire.
Well, I won't go that far to say he'll have a redemptive arc. That would be very interesting. That could definitely pick up the pace of the show a bit. So anyway, let's just jump past it. Christoph Waltz says, hey, because you're in prison, you may survive what's coming a bit longer. And so definitely, as you say, Mork, the promo department says that all hell's about to break loose. And maybe prison is the place to be.
It could be if he can get his sword back and also use the sword to get control of the remote so he can watch other cable TV channels in
other
New York
than,
City jail.
Other than TV1 reporting on Regis Airlines.
Other than TV1.
So you know who else was watching TV1? Gus's evil brother. I think there's a chance. His name is Crispin, believe it or not.
No.
That's what the closed caption says. So that's what's a bit crazy. So
get out of
there's
town.
A chance that ice cream eating bottom of the bucket of ice cream eating.
His elbow. His fist.
He's elbow deep.
Into this two-pint tub of ice cream. There's nothing left in there. The poor guy. Clearly, he did not study space work when he was in acting school. And God bless him. They just, you know, it's digital.
Object work.
They just shoot with digital. So there's no time to reload. So Gus comes home, and Gus, the thing about Gus is,
Gus doesn't like evil brother. Gus is the good brother.
Gus is the good brother, and he cares about who? His mom.
His mom.
That's right.
Way to go. Even though he won't go to mass with his mom,
no.
The show is introducing religion.
There was a bit
of religion between Abraham and Imitation Christoph Waltz, and now his mom's like, come with me to mass. So
Something's going on. Something's going on, people.
And so anyway, our good buddy Gus is like, hey, this clock you gave mom, where'd you get it? You didn't find it at a flea market.
Yeah.
And he says he stole it from Abraham's shop last week.
And we saw this happen. Yep. We saw this happen. This is when we first met Abraham. And that was a fun scene. A lot more fun than
this. Do you think evil brother, we're supposed to side with Gus, but don't you think evil brother has a point? You know, Gus was up the river. In the slammer for 2 years, and he had to take care of the mother.
But now, what did he have to do? I mean, we see mom. She's a handsome woman.
She's just buying ice cream left and right. Who's going to finish
that
off?
Well dressed. She's going to church.
He needed to make room in the freezer for real food. So he's been eating. Look at how much weight he's put on.
Mrs. Gus's mom doesn't need any help. That's all I'm saying. Doesn't need help from Gus nor from whatever chocolate chip Rocky Road double stuff. That's a new flavor coming out, everyone. Go buy it. So yeah, I do not like him. And
oh, I love him.
But who? Gus or the evil brother?
Evil brother.
Oh, but you're not going to care when he gets waxed.
Do you like how Gus told the evil brother? He's like, how long before you break her heart again? Well, her heart may need some warmth if it gets broken.
Are they dating?
It could be a stone heart.
I haven't even thought about that.
All right, from that, it cuts to my least favorite scene of the episode. I almost don't even want to talk about it. It's Everett back after saying no press conference. Suddenly there's a press conference. Now Nora and F attack Everett and the head of Health and Human Services.
That's right.
And they realize that apparently a terrible virus outbreak that could kill a lot of people is less important than commerce. Welcome to Obama's America, people.
Exactly. And Everett, who I prefer to call him poor man's Kevin Dunn.
Oh, very good.
He seems to be, from the Commedia dell'arte school of jerks. And as am I. Well, yes, as we've established that, Bubba.
Now, F got really upset with Everett. He grabbed his jacket. He said, "All right, don't you listen to." Then he chilled out, and he was like, I shouldn't have done that. That was alcoholic F, not clean and sober F.
That is true. If it wasn't for Nora and those blessed meetings, who knows where F would be.
So they leave. They're upset. He's trying to call our good friend, the medical examiner at the morgue, but nobody picks up. Nora's like, why aren't people picking up? They could follow it up with more questions. How did that guy's skull get crushed? How did the box disappear? But no, they're going to a bar, a place Ephraim really shouldn't be. They're going to a bar to meet our friendly pilot. And the pilot is drinking. He's kind of broke up.
That is true.
He's disturbed about these passengers. Something. Yeah, he seems like a nice guy.
He wants to do something, and that's nice, because for the most part, the only person who wants to do anything who's a good guy is F. So now
you don't want to give Abraham some love? He's trying.
Well, Abraham is trying, but he's old, and old people don't help ever or society. No, I think you're right, Abraham, but he knows what's going on.
He's informed.
He knows what he's up against, and he's ready to go slice some people up and throw them into the North Sea. He's ready. So, but they need to connect. They need to have a little chat. They haven't done it. So, of the people who know there's something wrong are putting up some effort, not as much as they really should.
No. But so the pilot mentions that he's got a little buzzing in his ear.
Yes.
And what does Ephraim suggest? He says, go see his good friend, the...
Diagnosticator, who is
the number one diagnosticator in all of medical New York.
Number one. Most doctors in New York City apparently cannot tell you what could be wrong with you if you go see them. So this guy...
Listen, go to St. Sebastian, see Dr. William Lester. The pilot was like, who is he? Ephraim, he's the best diagnostician I know.
That's right. We're going to get to the bottom of this.
And if he's busy, then you should see this guy. He's number two, you know, not as good.
Number two. Nora's not even on the list, but...
That brings up the point that I joked about during the show. The pilot's like, look at all these people trying to cover their ass, jumping through hoops, like the airline. They're only concerned about their liability. He's like, the union, the pilots union, which I'm a part of. They're worried about that. Everybody is covering their asses. No one cares about the truth. Ephraim goes, I do, and you do. And that's good right now. What's great is Nora's sitting right there. She's like, I care too. I not count?
Well, but she didn't actually say anything, so maybe she doesn't.
Maybe she if she doesn't care, Nora is going to become my favorite character.
Yes. Nora is, she's lovely.
If she's like, whatevs.
Whatevs. Talk to the hand. Why might and I'm curious, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I just, as you were talking, I couldn't help but wonder, why would the airplane pilots union want to cover this up?
Maybe they're afraid that the pilots are being blamed? I don't know. It beats me. Oh, they also mentioned, let's be honest, if you want to deliver a package from Germany to the United States but don't want to pay those high FedEx rates, just go to the airport, wear a suit,
get a badge.
Any sort of badge, and just say, put on plane.
Yeah.
999.
999.
Right, dial 999 plane for a free package delivery like this giant coffin, which must have weighed a ton, too. They're like, whatever. But the pilot's like, hey, top secret stuff, just put it on the plane.
The pilot, not a lot of people know this. Spoiler alert, I hate to do this, guys.
You hate to do it.
But that's why I'm warning you. Before he was a pilot for Regis Air, good old Baldy was an Uber driver.
Do you think the plane had the pink mustache over
less,
the front?
Less questions.
Mark, what's going on here?
We did not see it land, so it could have. It could have blown off in flight, the pink mustache. But yeah, I'm curious about why the union matters, but maybe we'll find out, maybe we won't. Doesn't matter. Let's move on.
Let's move on. So we cut to some of these delicious worms, and they're like, give me blood. Feed me Seymour. Feed me Ephraim. Feed me all night long. And so they're examining these worms. Obviously, this is a health crisis. What happens? F gets a text on the phone from Zach. Zach's a texter, not a caller, ladies.
Yeah, that is true.
And so F doesn't care. He's like, look, my son will know this is an emergency. Whatevs. But lovely Nora's like, hey, you got to care about your son. Take a break. She's like, these test results will take a while.
Go see
your son. And then came a moment, which actually is one of the reasons why I gave this episode more cartons of milk than the last episode. A moment that kind of shocked me. And that shocking moment is F, he's been looking at worms all day, and he's like, I'm going to stick my tongue in your throat.
Yes, Nora. He did.
He's like, I've seen the worms go for blood. I'm going to go for your tongue.
Something got transmitted, ladies and gentlemen.
And so why did that shock me? Well, I could have sworn in the last episode, in the court-appointed counseling scene, Ephraim was like, hey, ex-wife, or not divorced yet, wife, I'm confused. So wife, he's like, hey, you want somebody who loves our son? That's me. You want somebody who's a good father and good provider? That's me. You want somebody who loves you? That's me. And so he was saying he loved the wife in the last episode, but here, he's going to go to first base with Nora.
Well, he's not the only one, because wife...
Wait, what?
Wife...
What, are you going to go to first base with Nora?
I'm going to try.
I would like to, too. Giddy up.
Actress who plays Nora, if you'd like to be on our show,
please contact us
on twitter.com at... I don't know the words. The point is, not only is F moving on real quick, but so is Kelly. How quickly is she moving on? Well... She's renovating the house that she lived in, that she made the home in, with good old F. Matt from Sears.
It's one thing when your wife invites another guy into your bed, like she did with Matt from Sears.
Yes.
But when she also invites him to demolish your office and then rebuild it as a game room. Now, there are great Sears Roebuck appliances that are going to be installed in this new game room, but that's kind of harsh. For the ex to move on so quickly.
You know what would go great in a man cave? Or a game room, rather?
Worms? No, I don't know.
The box.
Oh, the box.
The perfect size.
Go.
Perfect size for it.
It would go. You know what else every game room needs?
No.
UV
light. UV
light, yes.
Yes.
Like, you want to know when you're playing games if rat piss or...
You need to know.
Or a worm sludge. Ammonia worm sludge has been on.
How many times have you had some friends over? You get up into the next room. You go into the next room. Yep. You bring back a six-pack of Natty Light. And there's something on the ground. And you don't know, is it rat
pee?
What is
it? Yeah.
Is it salsa? Where's the UV light? Now you can find out.
Okay.
Now, I don't want to go backwards, but I was...
Go backwards.
While one of the things that jumped out at me is we're talking about... These are medical doctors. These are scientists.
Right. Amen.
And they have found some sort of crazy worm. They actually found in the last episode...
They can't identify.
They found a new species. So now we have three huge unexplained things. We have poor man Robert Davi's head being smashed in.
Sure.
We have a giant box disappearing on video. And we have an entirely new species of worm being found.
What? Yeah, well, wait a minute. They got a plane full of passengers. They don't know how they died.
I feel like it's they're looking at it, but I just wish they were a little more, F is so distracted.
He is.
Maybe he should start drinking again. Maybe that would be better. Listen, FDR was a drunk. Churchill was a drunk.
Well,
Ulysses S. Grant was a drunk. Did not stop them.
All heroes. Now,
well, I know that last one was tough for you, Bob.
Yeah, thank you. But now hold on.
Yes.
Ephraim is working hard. He has been skipping marriage counseling sessions and court-appointed child custody cases.
Yep.
And you know what else he skipped? Breakfast.
That is true.
There's one place in all of Manhattan. It's got boulevard meetings.
It does.
It's got rat piss.
Yeah.
It's got
champagne.
Women dressed to the nines. Yeah. It's got champagne.
What else does it have?
It has
eggs.
Eggs. Scrambled eggs.
Scrambled eggs.
And so we go. We cut from Ephraim leaving the office to the hippest, hottest champagne brunch in all of New York. These women are dressed to the nines. But what's back in the kitchen? Somebody not dressed to the nine.
Yep.
It's our friendly city pest inspector, pest control, Russian. Thank God, people come to our shores and we give them job. Maybe
we give them badges. We give them suits.
We give badges. We let
them. That's what
we do. Let them look for rat piss.
That's what we do.
That's what the Statue of Liberty says when she wants give me your poor huddled masses to look for pests.
I'll give you a cat. And we'll go from there. So he still hasn't killed anybody. He promised to kill somebody.
It's early. It's only Sunday brunch.
That is true.
It's brunch, man.
He did not kill anybody.
No.
And you could look at that as a good thing. I look at that as boring. So if I'm in a hot, snazzy midtown omelet bar where there's girls in 7-inch heels, and a Russian vermin inspector comes in, I want something to happen.
Well, what if you want something to happen? Well, would you consider a high-powered lunch something to happen? A high-powered lunch where...
You're Bubba, where, I stand
where,
corrected.
Where Bolivar's manager, Ruby, is getting him offers of $300,000 for a 30-minute sit-down
but
interview.
But that's peanuts.
That is
Jones.
Peanuts.
And yeah, so the big action was upstairs, as it often is
upstairs,
at most high-end egg
past
joints.
The velvet room at the
past
at the brunch.
Past the velvet rope at the round table. They're drinking champagne. And not only champagne, but they're drinking their own blood.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
there's
yeah.
A humming.
There's a humming in their ears. Now, what do you think could
Jones,
be causing
Joan
that?
Joan needs some Visine. Joan's eyes are completely red. No one seems to notice this.
No, she's, got a pain in the neck.
Yeah, a little.
She's got a physical embodiment of her character.
Yeah, thank you.
She's having lunch with Bolivar and his manager, Ruby. His manager, Ruby. And she's like...
Ruby's an operator.
She's like, let's do this lawsuit. We'll get a lot of money. Let's do this. And then after she's done talking with them, she's like, well, I guess I should finally go home and see my kids and my husband. What?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
You've been on a flight from Germany. You were held in contamination well overnight.
A flight where every other person
died. You're accidentally coughing up blood. You got bloody gums. And then, but rather than go home and see your family, you're like, I want to have brunch with Bolivar.
Yeah. I think that can wait. I think that can wait, too. You're absolutely right. But in her defense...
Yeah? They're stupid kids.
They are stupid kids. They make exactly like a genius. But no, what if high-powered Attorney Jones' husband is poor man's Christoph Waltz?
Whoa, now that would be a great twist. Boy, people, if you have... We have not read the book, so we can make predictions.
Is there a connection? Correct. Because we did have, and poor man's Max von Sydow, we had he was talking about, setting telling the story and distracting people, and people aren't going to think about it. So he obviously has some sort of he's pulling some strings. So maybe she was calling the Health and Human Services. He was doing something else. Is there?
I
don't know.
Maybe
there's something there. But
I like that. That'd be a fun thing.
If there is something there, I would love to see that as opposed to
the Russian health inspectors.
Russian health inspector. I will take that any minute of the day. But all of the custody drama and all of the AA meeting.
Well,
drama.
So he comes out, and these people are dressed so sexily, and he's like, here's a dead rat. And
are you talking about the cooks in the kitchen?
No, I'm talking about the clientele there at this place.
Oh, right.
They are dressed up to the nines. He holds up the rat. They all run out. And Bolivar, by his friends, he goes by Gabe. He has a real funny line. He's like, well, I guess we don't have to pay. So, folks, if you don't want to pay, just bring a dead rat with you to any high-end, exclusive Sunday brunch, champagne brunch restaurant in the Big Apple.
Or a Russian police officer who's going to kill a lot of people. Either
bring
or.
Either or.
One thing I couldn't help but notice in that scene was we have, in this scene, we have a man holding up a small, relatively small. I mean, it was pretty, there was some meat on there, but relatively small. Disgusting creature.
Yep.
And let's contrast that to the first episode.
What do you mean?
Well, poor man's Robert Davi sees something much larger.
Oh, right.
Much bloodier, much scarier.
He's like, I'll walk over there. What's going on?
Right up to it and then gets his head smashed in. So maybe the moral of the story is you see anything that you're sort of afraid of, run like crazy.
Now, Bolivar, Ruby's not just a manager, she's also a pimp. He's like,
she is.
I need to get my pipes cleaned. Remember, last week he told us he's in it all for the pussy.
Yeah.
And so he's like, get me some ladies. And we leave. Will she get him some ladies? The answer is yes. We find out in a bit.
Yeah.
But then we jump to good old, I think his name's once again Mr. Johnson. What? Max von Sydow ripoff.
Yeah.
At Stoneheart. And his underling is like, listen, I've got track on a donor who could possibly donate a liver for you because your liver's failing. Let's do this. And the old man's like, no, I got a better plan. And so it feels to me, once again, I've not read any books, but it feels to me like this guy is dying, and his plan to keep on living is the eternal life vampire plan. Is that what you think?
It's not a bad plan. It seems to be working for Joan Rivers, so why not? Why not? But
oh, my God. You talk about the strain on her face.
Oy. Yeah, it is... We haven't seen Derek Jeter or Joan Rivers in the room with the guy who lives inside the box. I feel sort of bad for the friendly guy, the personal valet.
Yeah, the nice underling.
But he's going to pay. We all know that.
But let's
get to that.
All right, so no, we can't get to him paying.
I don't want.
Because guess what? We've got F arriving home for family drama. He's on the phone with Kelly as he comes up to the door, and he's like, uh-oh. No, he's on the phone, with Nora, his sexy coworker. And there's his wife. He's like, you gotta hang up, zoinks.
That is exactly what he
says. And this wife, this actress, is beautiful. She should contact me on Twitter. That's Fit and Trim, FitenTrim, @FitandTrim on Twitter. And she's like, I'm really glad that you're on this crazy airplane thing. And she's like, I care about you. By the way, I'm fucking Matt from Sears.
I'm fucking Matt from Sears, and he rebuilt the house. And we see what's going on in the game. That's a lot of work. Is it? Did he have friends come over, and did they get to fool around with Kelly too?
Before anything happens, F has to have an awkward encounter with one of his wife's friends named Diane, and of course he can't even remember her name, Diane, and she's kind of giving him grief about it. She's drinking wine in front of him, not cool since he's an alcoholic. And she's just dissing him, and so the reason why she's Chekhov's worm bait. We're introducing this person who's rude to our hero Ephraim, so she can be killed later. And the wife says, hey, they're converting your office into a game room. They didn't convert. They bulldozed and started anew. There's not even drywall up. They are doing it. But once again, is the
more
show...
of poor man Robert Davi's skull is still intact than than Ephraim's office. So yeah,
right. Now Matt from Sears, he's going to get a great giant screen TV. He knows a place where he can get a good deal.
Sure does.
And he goes in for the bro hug with Ephraim. He's like, hey, I think when all is said and done, we're going to be friends. What do you think?
I think Matt is going to hook up with Diane.
Oh!
And they're both going to die.
That's the only way Ephraim could get back together with a wife.
Yeah, maybe. But he does the awkward bro hug with the guy who's fooling around with the old lady.
Oh, yeah, just and totally doing that hot wife.
I mean, that figuratively... don't want to spoil things for
Listen,
my man
I'm
Bubba.
Just going to imagine the hot wife.
No, I think you should.
I'm going to imagine working at Sears first, so I can really get the full experience.
Step one, work at Sears. And then he goes and he has a chat, and it's a very direct conversation where Zach basically tells him that you're a shitty father.
Oh, yeah. How about this? I was talking about Chekhov's best friend, Diane.
Yeah.
Zach's does Chekhov's custody hearing. Zach is like, hey, tomorrow's a custody hearing. Zach's like, you better not be late. F's like, I won't be late. Zach is like, no, you can't be late. You really, really can't be late. We all know F's going to be late to this custody hearing. Why doesn't he even ask to request it be moved? He's fighting evil worms.
That is true. Maybe.
Would that be a good excuse? Your Honor, could this court date be moved? I've got to fight these worms.
What? This is another spoiler alert.
Yeah?
F's attorney at the custody hearing... Yeah. Is going to be Joan Lusk.
Oh, she's very effective. She got out of that quarantine. He should hire her.
He should hire her in a second. Hey, look, I know we don't disagree on this, but I need your help here.
Oh, but you know what? The kid, Zach, is really laying it on thick. He's like, Dad, you say you want joint custody, but you're always busy. F's like, not after this case, I won't be. And the kid's like, that's what you always say. Enough is enough.
That is true. That is true. But... you know, F's got an uphill battle here. But I look at it like, look, he can repair one relationship with his son, or he can save the entire world. What's he going to do?
Well, for my sake, I hope he saves the world.
Well, I do too.
All right, so...
You know, I've got this humming in my ear.
Oh, really?
I got a humming.
I know a number one dietitian.
Do we have a diagnostic mission?
All right, so yeah. Ephraim, we've seen two episodes. We know he's always late to court-appointed custody hearings.
Yeah.
You know what he's always early to? AA.
That is true.
And sure enough, at a church, there's his good buddy, his sponsor.
Poor man's Dennis O'Hare.
Poor man's Dennis O'Hare, and we're talking dirt poor. We're talking those food voucher poors, Dennis O'Hare. And it's an AA meeting. Ephraim stands up and he kind of tells us that he's been sober for a year and 11 days.
Yeah.
So one probably year, the last days. Eclipse he was...
And F was at a bar earlier today. That didn't make him want to drink.
He saw Diane drinking the wine.
He was hanging out with Diane drinking wine. He didn't want to drink. It was that awkward bro hug with Matt that made him want to drink.
This is really a great character monologue where he gets to talk about himself, gets to be sarcastic, gets to be, you know, kind of revealing. What did you think of this moment for our wigged hero, Corey Stahl?
Well, I thought I
actually kind of liked it. It wasn't all good, but I thought he delivered it well.
Well, no, I think he's a fantastic actor. But I think
fantastic hairpiece.
Fantastic. He's almost as good as the hairpiece. And I got dibs on it, ladies and gentlemen, when they have the fan auction for that thing. But no, I think it's the kind of thing that we should not be wasting time on, nor Mr. Stoll's considerable talents. Because everything that they're talking about is in the past, and is not going to have any direct impact on... It may have an impact on a custody hearing. It may have an impact on his relationship.
You don't think we'll come back to this AA meeting ever again?
Maybe we will, and maybe some of them will have worms.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Coming out of them.
Hi, my name's Bubba. I've had these evil worms for the last 3 days.
Yeah.
Welcome, Bubba.
Yeah, that I can see. But that's the kind of thing I just, you know, who cares? Let's be honest, who cares?
What's interesting is he says at this thing, he says, listen, I can't blow it with Zach. He's the only thing I have left. He's the only thing that matters. How do you think Nora feels about that?
I don't think Nora feels very good. You know who else?
How do you think feels? Who else feels bad is Matt from Sears.
Matt from Sears doesn't feel good. You know who else doesn't feel good?
Who?
The other 6.99999 billion people on planet Earth that F is going to let die so he can go to goddamn Zach's stupid play. It is a good play. It's they're doing Waiting for Johnson.
They're good. Waiting for Worms.
Waiting for Worms. No, it's it bugged me, that monologue, because we've what else do we need to know about the guy? He drinks milk. He's got a toupee. He doesn't like bureaucrats. You know what else do we need to know? Nothing.
Okay, so, if you thought that scene was boring, let's go to the least sexy orgy ever. It's Bolivar, a.k.a. Gabe, to his friends and manager. He has to get some Viagra via the nose because he can't even eat these three sexy, probably women who are still hungry for eggs.
They still want it.
He's having sex with them, and he's having trouble getting it up. Now, if you're a rock star and you have ladies who want to get busy with you, why would you take off the wig? They want the image. If the image of Bolivar is with this crazy wig, wear the wig.
Well, I was at an orgy once with David Crosby, and he did the exact same thing.
Oh, really?
Yes. No,
I don't ever put out pictures from that, please.
I never will. It was the infamous one. Adele was there, Flavor Flav.
911 is a joke.
And Montel Williams.
Now, hey, the Bolivar, last week he said he was in it for the pussy.
Yes.
He doesn't seem so interested in pussy anymore. He seems like he's more interested in blood.
That is absolutely right.
And he's this goth rocker, and the woman's a bit shocked that he bit her. What's going on here?
Yeah, that was.
Now he's licking the floor for blood.
Yeah, that's a normal Tuesday night for Gabe. But here, this is another small complaint that I have, and it's actually not small. It's gigantic and fundamental.
Sure.
So it would be really exciting. Now we know, and this goes, we know that the world is, sort of teetering on the brink and all that. And we know that there's some strains, if you will, of vampirism.
Sure.
Great. But we're getting this point of view. We're getting Gabe's point of view. And he knows there's something wrong with him because of the humming and because he was on a plane where every single person died. But it'd be kind of neat if he was, if the audience, in addition to Gabe, were in the dark about what's going on with him.
Oh, I like that. I see what you're saying.
And so we have, we hear the heartbeat and all that, and we see the vein pumping and all that, but it'd be a lot more of a jolt. It'd be maybe even a little scary if we hadn't already seen how all these creatures react to the blood and, all that. The cold you can sort of explain. So I thought that there's been a lot of missed opportunities for some great reveals in this show, whether it's Turncoat Jim, whether it's the vampires, whether it's this brand new species of worm that has a, alien sticker thing in it.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Whatever.
So, anyway.
Well, it feels like, because you brought him up, that you were missing Jim. But guess what? He's back.
Oh, good.
He's back at the hospital, St. Sebastian.
Does he have a bag?
He brought the saddle bag.
I just realized it. I've been making fun of Jim and his bag.
You have.
And it's a lovely bag.
It. Look how low it hangs.
It's beautiful.
It's leather.
It's supple. He probably moisturizes it.
You know why he has to have a bag? You know what you carry in there?
UV light.
UV, how did you know?
Well, it's how you fix all your problems.
So Ephraim... what's hilarious is Jim drives all the way to this hospital. Ephraim gives him some tasks and says, get out of here.
Yeah.
Or no, he says, hand me the UV light, and then he makes him leave.
Yeah.
And so we're putting the UV light up to our good friend, the pilot, who's really feeling bad. There's the diagnosticator there.
Yep.
And he's got the same scar in his throat that everybody else had, but guess what else he has under his skin? Worms.
Worms.
And that's kind of creepy. Maybe not scary, but kind of, whoa, what's going on here?
Yeah, no, that's the kind of thing, too. I would call that...
Wouldn't you immediately want to quarantine the room? Maybe try to cut out some of the worms? What's going on here?
I would do something. But what do these guys do instead? They run away.
They're like, oh, no.
We're in charge here, and now we're leaving.
Right. They're like, that's their big... That's their go-to. You got to have a go-to move.
They're the absentee problem.
And that's their move. They're like, okay, you know, this smashed-in head, CDC's in charge of the investigation. Goodbye. Then it's like, hey, this pilot has worms. Later.
See you later. Gotta go. Gotta plug my meter. So, yeah. So
later, losers. So now they're on their way to the morgue because somebody hasn't answered their phone.
Right.
Why not just call somebody else? You're telling me you only know one person at the morgue. While they're on the way to driving to the morgue.
The way when Michael Bloomberg took over as the mayor of New York City.
Right.
He was faced with
cutbacks.
A lot of problems. He had a cut cost. So what did he do? One morgue, one medical examiner, one telephone.
Right. Yeah. But de Blasio got elected because it was like, that's a morgue only for the rich. We need morgues for the poor, the middle class.
The morgues for the poor don't have a telephone, and some don't have medical examiners.
So while they're driving...
So quick complaint.
Yeah, okay. So while F and Nora, boy, he will not leave her alone. Give her some space.
Mm-hmm.
Let me get in there. So while he's driving, he gets a call from the father whose little daughter showed up at the end of last episode, and he's like, thanks for releasing my daughter.
Yeah.
And he's like, she got released out of the morgue, that shouldn't be. And he's like, no, she's here, she's alive.
Yeah. Frenchie
is another reason.
Frenchie's not upset that they released the daughter and made her walk home.
Yeah, no big
deal.
Didn't deliver her to the door. He's like, whatever.
Yeah.
And so Ephraim's like, something's going on. He's like, how could she be there? And Nora's the only one using logic. She's like, well, we're going to the morgue. If we see her body, we'll know the guy's delusional. Dun, dun, dun. But before we can get to the morgue, we have to follow Mr. Johnson and his good valet, the nice guy. And the valet's like, listen, this is a scam. This is a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to take advantage of you. But Mr. Johnson was like, hey, they've got a lot of power. It's going to help me with whatever illness or whatever situation I'm in. He seems to be walking and looking fine.
Yeah.
But he's like, hey, valet, they'll help you with their power in a bit, too.
Parking
but he
tickets.
Does, yeah, he leaves the little SUV out on the ramp.
Yeah.
And he walks in, and uh-oh.
Yep.
Everybody's favorite piece of luggage, the box is open.
It's open.
There's dirt in there, and it's not filled with dirt. It's like, hey, you know, there's like an indentation as if something was in this dirt and has come out.
Mm-hmm.
And he does, Mr. Johnson does something real crazy. He puts his hand in the dirt, and he turns around, and who's behind him? Good old ripoff, Christoph Waltz. He's like, oh, I keep calling him Mr. Johnson. His name's Mr. Palmer. Apologies, listeners. We're trying to catch up. So Mr. Palmer, he's like, hey, you wanted him. He's here. And so we see this kind of thing fly by, and it messes up Mr. Palmer's hair. And Mr. Palmer gets on his knees. He's begging. And it's the Chronicles of Riddick arising from the dirt. What do you call this monster who can speak? And speak English.
He can speak English, and he's, he's a little passive-aggressive. Well, you can't look at my face? I mean, come on. Is that necessary? The guy can lift boxes and smash skulls.
He removes the hood from his cloak here,
yeah.
And we see that this monster is bald. So you know what I thought?
Mm-hmm.
It's F without the wig.
It's F without the wig. But we have... We have not seen F and this guy.
But Mr. Palmer's scared. He's whimpering.
And we're not. So obviously, the dynamic when we first met them, we figure Mr. Palmer's in charge and poor man's Christoph Waltz is one of his lackeys. But apparently, that's not what's going on.
No. Something big's going on.
Something big is going on.
So we come to the last scene of the episode. F and Nora have arrived at the morgue.
Yep.
A chair is overturned. F is like, this chair has been overturned.
It's not never a good sign. If you're ever anywhere and there's a chair not in its right place,
something's wrong.
Something's wrong, people.
Check for worms if you see that at your house, people. So they walk into the morgue. Guess what you got to pull out? You know it. I know it. The UV light.
The UV light.
Folks,
yep.
We're going to have a...
Hammacher Schlemmer has
right,
one
we're gonna
for
have a
$18.99.
Right. We're going to have a drinking game every time they pull out the UV light. You got to drink. every time he drinks milk, we're going to do push-ups. So we didn't have to do any push-ups this week.
Nope.
That's why I like this show better than last week.
But I'm still sweating. I don't know why.
All right, so they go to the morgue. They don't see any bodies, but they see a lot of that. What most of us would think under UV light was semen. They see a lot of that ammonia worm footage.
What happens at the morgue?
What happens at the morgue?
Stays did you ever at the see morgue. The movie? I don't want to know.
Okay, night shift.
Night shift? Oh, my God. That was amazing.
We come to the very last scene in the episode.
Yes.
And that is daughter takes a bath. And you know what?
Never a good idea.
When I heard the episode had kind of some sexual situations in it, I thought, oh, it's just this kinky orgy from Bolivar. But no, daughter's taking a bath, and
they're
she
French.
Wants to give dad some tongue.
They're French. Don't judge. And that's terrible. And she does.
So
she certainly does.
People were losing their hair. Like, somebody was losing their hair earlier in the episode. The dad
Bolivar lost his hair.
Yeah, the dad goes to the daughter, and he puts his hand in his hair, and her hair comes out.
Yeah.
And he's like, here, honey, let me dry you off with this towel. I'm so happy you're here. And out from her friggin' tongue... is it her tongue or is it just a giant worm that comes out of her and starts sucking her dad's blood?
Yeah.
And a father shouldn't see a daughter this old bath. So you're right. This was wrong.
French. They're European.
Je m'appelle vampire.
Je m'appelle Mr. Palmer. Yeah,
So the dad gets got... is he dead, or is he going to come back as a vampire zombie? What do you think, Mork?
Well, I think he'll probably come back and probably start texting our good friend F at all hours of the
night. Right, I've got a play coming up, F.
Yeah, I'd like you to be
so,
there.
So that's the episode. You think it was a step down from last week?
Yeah, I don't like all, you know, I think let's just get to it. Too much exposition.
We're going to get to it, but we need some of our heroes to kind of gather. You know, we need our... pest control guy, if we assume he's a hero. We need Abraham. We need F. We need them all together. Maybe even Gus. Is Gus supposed to be your hero? We need them to get together. I liked it a bit more. There was certainly less exposition. I like some of these comical characters. So I have hope that it's going to get better. Hey, we've said our opinion. We want to hear your opinion.
Absolutely.
Once again, write us. You can reach me. I'm Bubba. You can reach me on Twitter at FitandTrim. That's FitenTrim. FitandTrim on Twitter. Let us know what you think of this big budget show, FX's The Strain, and tonight's episode, The Box. Any closing comments there, Mork?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you. I was looking for my UV light.
Oh, Mork, turn that off. Those stains are... That's nothing. That's rat piss. Rat piss, Mork!